Welcome to Healthy You Radio Network, radio that empowers you to heal you. This is Dr. Keisha Ewers, your network host, and I'm proud to introduce the most dynamic show on radio that's all about the health of your mind and the expansion of your consciousness. Welcome to Mind Matters Radio with meditation guru, registered hypnotherapist, Enneagram coach, and Reiki master, Ajay Amboris.
Ever wonder what you're really capable of? Scientists tell us we use only a fraction of our true potential. Welcome to Mind Matters, part of the Healthy You Radio Network, where we'll explore the frontiers of human growth. Find out what experts in the field of psychology, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, and science have to say that will help you to live your life to the fullest. And now your host, Ajay Amboris.
And welcome, everyone, to Mind Matters Radio. I'm Ajay Amboris, your fellow explorer in human potential, and we're here every week for one reason, and that is because your mind does matter, and we try to give you the best information we've got that's out there to help you heal and develop your mind. So today, our guest is Veronica Tugaleva. She is the author of The Love Mindset, An Unconventional Guide to Healing and Happiness. And Veronica is not only an author, but also a speaker, a people lover, a reformed cynic, and the modern day person's guide to love and spirituality. So, Veronica, without further ado, welcome to Mind Matters.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Sure. Okay, so you're talking to us from where again?
Toronto.
Toronto, okay, yes. I almost said Tacoma. I knew it started with a T. But a little further away. Okay. Mm-hmm. So The Love Mindset, an unconventional guide to healing and happiness. Let's start with that. What's unconventional about it?
That's a good question. I guess what's unconventional about what I teach is that it's completely derived from the inside. I really teach people to become the experts on themselves and get to know themselves and reconnect with the part of them that is already healed and the part of them that's already happy, as opposed to what you'll find in most modern day doctrine, which is seeking for answers in experts outside of yourself. So I kind of flip that up on its head.
Interesting. Now, I really like that. So finding what's already happy within you, is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, the reason I like that so much is it happens to fully coincide with my own philosophy, which, I don't know if you knew, but I teach meditation, and I'm very much appreciative of the Advaitic Vedanta schools in India. And, the basic precept there is that we already have the infinite within us, and mm-hmm. it's just obscured. And if we can just kind of clear the what's obscuring it, then we, you could say remember our true nature, or just are able to abide in our true nature, which is happiness. It is the self of happiness. So I agree. It's unconventional. It's the first time I've run into a Western, self-help person that has a similar philosophy. How did you arrive at that?
This is actually the best part of the story. So I was so cynical before all of this happened to me. So I was suffering quite a bit from addiction and eating disorders and just profound self-hatred. Mm-hmm. And so I had a mental breakdown, and I faced this choice where I had to change or die. And so I chose to change, and I meant to heal myself. And I accidentally found this amazing state where I was beautiful, everybody else was beautiful, I was just swimming in pure love, and I felt connected to everything. And, I had no idea what it was. I had never touched a spiritual book. I actually didn't believe that love existed up until that point. I was considered myself quite academic. So I started writing the book, trying to find out what was going on. And after I had had an epiphany, like, oh my gosh, it's always here. We just need to open up to love. We just need to open up to peace. We don't need to open up to healing. It's already here. Then it was too funny to find that this has been taught for so long. in so many parts of the world. This is just ancient wisdom. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty funny how I had found my way to it myself. And that, I think, is better than learning it out of any book or any institution or any church, because it just feels so true when you find it on your own.
Yes, definitely. Now, in reading your book, you touch on those days when you had that intense self-hatred. And I thought, that in itself is very interesting, because that did precede your insight and your sort of transformation. So maybe just for the sake of our listeners who aren't privy to that, could you kind of describe what you were going through during that? Like you describe one episode in a store. Wait, I'll let you tell it, because it was very surprising to hear that. But I really enjoy that. So, and maybe some of our listeners out there might just relate to this. So would you mind kind of describing what it was that you were going through in those days?
Sure. The episode that you speak of, I think it speaks a lot of what was going on at the time. What had happened was I think I must have been about 13 years old. It was very, very young. And I was in Sears with my parents, and we were just walking and looking at things. And I remember I had my head down. And at this point, I wasn't looking people in the eye very often, because I was very isolated. We had come from the Ukraine by the time that I was 8. So I had only been in Canada for 5 years. And they had been 5 grueling years where I was this chubby immigrant child who didn't fit in with anybody. And in my search for friends, I had retreated to the television to be my best friend. And the television wasn't a very good friend. It kept telling me that I wasn't good enough, was ugly, it was horrible. So when I went out into public, it was worse than television. Because on television, you can tell yourself, oh, the women are photoshopped, they stretch the screen, things like that. But if I was out in public and I saw someone who was more attractive than me, which to me was pretty much every single female I ever came across, then it would hurt so much more, because you just couldn't tell yourself those lies. So I just remember being in Sears, and I was doing my best to look down and try to avoid the cracks on the floor. And I guess my mom pointed something out, and I ended up looking up, and I see in front of me this girl, and she's just, she makes me have that feeling, that feeling like my skin is crawling, like, why can't I just be her? Why can't I just crawl out of my own skin and just become her? And I just don't want to be me. I just want to cut off everything that is me, all of this hideous shell that I have encompassed around myself, and just transmit myself into her body, be anyone else but me. And as I'm looking at her and walking forward, it wasn't until I almost walked right face first into it that I realized it was a mirror. And it was like one of those floor to ceiling poles that they have at the department stores. And I looked away from that experience being like, wait, what? What is that? I didn't understand what that was. And I had that sort of awareness of myself for another 8-9 years. Mm-hmm. And it was just spiraling downwards until right after I broke down, I began to look in the mirror. And after a couple of weeks of looking at a reflection I absolutely hated, all of a sudden, I saw what I had seen at that department store. I saw who I really was. I saw the beauty that was always there underneath all of those layers of judgment. It was very powerful to get that feeling back.
So what, can you account for, like, why did you feel that way about yourself? I mean, that it seems a rather extreme kind of perspective to have on yourself. Are you aware of what created that feeling?
Without going too far into this portion of it, I think there's just been a really long line of transmitted self-hatred in my family. Mm-hmm. It was just sort of like, when I look at families, I sort of see us evolving from our parents. what our parents hadn't learned. Mm-hmm. And in a very big way, my parents had learned from their parents in the way that they had come to Canada and they had found abundance, you know, more financial abundance. They really pulled themselves up by the bootstraps and made it work in this country. But there's still this line of sort of self-hatred and judgment that still runs as far back as I've seen. And so I think that was my role in the evolution of my family, in the evolution of our legacy, that that was sort of my cross to bear. And now, having gone back to my family, I just see that this is a lesson that it's not only them. I think a lot of Eastern European culture, and maybe other cultures too, there's this sort of attitude of you must be number one. And if you're not, then you're nothing, you're nobody. So, you know, I did very well in school, like very well. And I always felt like I was smart, you know, but there was never any self-acceptance. If anything, there were all these conditions, constant conditions for who I had to be, what I had to look like. And those were set on me by my family and by myself. And so what started happening throughout my life was that I would end up in these situations where I was devaluing myself. So I would end up in abusive situations, like physically and sexually. I would end up in these situations where I would be taking drugs and I began to get addicted, and then I would be abusive to my body. So there's this constant sort of cycle where I was rejecting parts of myself and setting conditions for my own self-respect and my own happiness. And I think for about 10 years with this, I guess I was cycling downwards, but going faster and faster, you know, trying to find my own self-respect, trying to earn it, and never really quite doing that, and actually ending up doing worse and worse and worse. And it was funny because I think I was sticking a mask on my face, trying to become someone else, but I was also sticking bandages on all the wounds that I had incurred from all this time. I had so much trauma built up over time, and eventually I just realized, you know, I'm the one I wake up to in the morning and go to bed with at night. And if I'm going to make it through this life, that person I wake up to has to be a friend. You know, she's got to be on my side. And that was the most profound switch. Like, now I'm the best support I've got. And it's made a world of difference.
No kidding. Oh, that's a beautiful realization. So that realization itself was a turning point for you.
Yeah, it was. It was. And, you know, I don't know why I began to look at myself in the mirror. I can't tell you. I just know that after I had made the choice, I was like, okay, I'm live or die. I'm going to live. You know, I'm going to change. And I woke up the next morning, and I was about to put on my makeup, and I wore quite a bit of makeup at the time, and I just couldn't. You know, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, wow, what's going on here? Can't be solved with makeup. You know, I just realized very strongly, like, I hate myself. That's a problem. And I realized for the first time that it was a problem I could fix, that it wasn't like there was something inherently wrong with me that I was feeling this way about myself. There was just something inherently wrong with my thought process about myself. And that was healing. That was amazing.
Well, I want to hear more about this, you know, inner process that totally turned things around and how you changed that thought process. But I think we're about at the point where it's we need to go to a break. So let's do that. And we'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Mind Matters, and I'm talking to Veronica Tugaleva. She is the author of The Love Mindset. Stay with us.
Enjoy a relaxing, healing, hour-long Reiki session through the hands of meditation and Reiki master Ajay and Boris. Reiki treats the whole person, including body, emotions, mind, and spirit, creating many beneficial effects that include relaxation and feelings of peace, security, and well-being. Many have reported miraculous results. Ajayan incorporates tantric mantras and yantras that bring an added dimension and power to traditional Reiki healing. To find out more and to schedule your appointment, email ajayan@ajayan.com today. Get half off on your Reiki treatment with Ajayan. Email ajayan@ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com. To schedule your appointment today.
Don't just take our word for it. Listen to what others have to say about Fern Life Center's amazing weight loss program. Give yourself the gift of good health this season.
Since going on the Fern Life Center Ideal Protein Diet Program, I've been able to go off my cholesterol medication. My total cholesterol is 58 points lower than it was 3 months ago, and that is after going off Lipitor. My good cholesterol has improved, and my bad cholesterol is down, and my triglycerides are now normal. I've lost 55 pounds, 26 inches in 5 months. I feel like I have my life back and am free from my food addictions. Woohoo! Thanks, Keisha, and Ideal Protein.
Go to FernLifeCenter.com to schedule your first appointment today. That's FernLifeCenter.com. Mention this ad and get a water bottle absolutely free.
Meditation heals and vitalizes both mind and body. Learn this wonderful art with world-renowned meditation instructor Ajayan Boris in the Effortless Mind Meditation Classes. The Effortless Mind Meditation Classes offer a direct experience of exceptionally deep meditation, accessible to anyone. Call the Fern Life Center today, 425-391-FERN. The Effortless Mind. So easy, anyone can do it.
Ajayan's next Effortless Mind Meditation class is being held in Issaquah, May 3rd. For more information and to register, visit ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Mind Matters, and I'm Jan Boris. And, of course, this is the Healthy You Radio Network. Just a reminder, if you can't tune in each Monday at 1 p.m., you can access all of our shows via podcast 24/7 or archived on healthyyouradio.com or ajayan.com. And if you're out of radio range, you can listen live online via healthyyouradio.com or ajayan.com. So, all right, we are speaking with Veronica Tugaleva about an amazing book, The Love Mindset, An Unconventional Guide to Healing and Happiness. And just to give a plug for this book, it's incredibly honest and insightful. And I think anyone would benefit by this, especially anybody who's going through the kinds of experiences that we were talking about in our last segment, where she felt a lot of self-loathing and anybody who wants to turn around their life. So, check it out. Veronica, I'm sure it's available through Amazon.com. How about in bookstores?
Yeah, some of them, yeah, for okay. Sure.
Okay.
Well, check
your bookstore. If you can't find it, check Amazon.com. Beautiful book. All right. Very honest. I love that. I think personal experience is the most moving. You know, we always love when we're reading, even if it's written by a therapist, what interests us the most are those personal stories, you know, and then it's nice to hear the commentary of the therapist or the author, but it's that story. And so that really grabs you. So anyway, this book is along those lines. So I wanted to also say, you know, the first segment we talked about the kind of state of mind you were in prior to your transformation, and although you had really hit bottom, as you were describing, you know, it's always interesting to me to hear that, because there are a number of cases that you can find out about that where people, you know, have gone really to rock bottom, but then they just have a hugely transformational experience. And like a couple of people come to mind. Eckhart Tolle, you know, was one. He was living on a park bench, and then one day, you know, went from depression and whatever else he was going through to a higher state of consciousness. Same story with Byron Katie, which she is a wonderful teacher that I really admire. So it's an interesting case, you know, how this can happen. And from your description, it sounded like you had something like this. So I really admire that. So let's see. We were talking right before the break about that you're changing your thinking process. And so I wonder if you could describe that and you know, contrast, like, how did your thinking change exactly? And was it really just one day looking in the mirror, you know, a kind of overnight thing? Or did it take work over time?
So I think there's two parts of it. You know, there's the everyday work, which still happens every day, happens every time I get triggered. Mm-hmm. But I guess what happened in that day was that I changed my thinking about my thinking. Mm. And that's sort of what the book is about. So there's the two things that we all do, is like we think and then we think about thinking. And some people don't think about thinking, right? They just think and react and just live completely out of their mindset. So when we begin to think about thinking, then the question is, well, what is the nature of thought? What is going on? If I look at myself in the mirror and I think she's hideous, what does that mean? Does that thought reflect reality? And so in that moment, right after I broke down, the next morning, I realized that my thoughts might not accurately describe reality. And so that is really the most important part. That's what I talk about in the Love Mindset quite a bit. I talk about how your mind, just like your body, needs nourishment. And if you nourish your body properly, it will work for you, with you, as a vehicle for your purpose, as a vehicle for who you are. But if you don't nourish your body, if you, you know, put crap in it, then it's not going to work. And your mind's the exact same way. Your mind needs to be nourished, and the mind is nourished with thoughts. And what I sort of liken it to is that the mind is like the roots of a tree. You have to water them with fresh water, and then the leaves open up. Mm-hmm. And so all of those pleasant emotions, especially love, they're like the sun. They're available all the time, peace, love. But in order for your leaves to soak up the sun, you have to water your mind first. And it's a little funny because every time that I'm speaking to a person, or if I'm speaking to a group, then I get them to think about the word, you are powerful. Like, how do you feel when somebody says that to you? How do you feel when somebody says you are beautiful? How do you feel when somebody says something like, I don't know, you will live forever? You know, it makes all of us feel good. And when something makes all of us feel good, that's sort of like when we eat something and it makes our stomach feel good. That's an indicator. The positive feelings are an indicator that we're eating the thoughts that are nourishing our mind. And sort of there was that changeover, and I realized that some thoughts are very nourishing for me. They open me right up, and then I can, you know, flow in life and enjoy myself and other people and do something meaningful in the world. And other thoughts I am allergic to, so I swell up, close down, start to have these allergic reactions like anger and sadness and all of that. So that still happens. Oh, it happens every day, you know, to a degree. I mean, I wouldn't say every day, but, you know, like I do work with people, so I watch it happen to them every day. For me, a crisis now is, I mean, it's pretty rare. I still do have like really strong emotions that come on, and then I got to sit with them. You know, I got to sit with them and I got to figure out where they're coming from and what am I allergic to, and where are these thoughts coming from? Do these thoughts represent reality? How am I reacting to them? And then I can process through that, and I can help other people process through that. And it's been easier. It gets easier every day. I mean, obviously I have to remind myself every day, but, you know, there's just not. And this happens to people I work with too. Just one day you're going to bed and you look back on the day and you say, wow, I wasn't unhappy even once that entire day. And then you realize that that was the first time that's ever happened to you since you were a child.
Wow.
And then you just have more and more and more days like that.
Well, that's amazing. You're describing a wonderful path that I think, you know, almost anybody can benefit from. And I kind of find it interesting, you know, like that initial experience you talked about when you were in Sears, you know, where you saw a reflection of yourself and, you know, you were feeling hideous inside about yourself. And yet you saw this reflection of yourself and you thought, God, I wish I, you know, looked like her. And, and just felt jealous over that image, which happened to be of yourself. So clearly your thinking wasn't, that negative thinking about yourself was not reflecting reality, And that kind of thing ended up turning into an insight that changed your life, which I just think is great. It's interesting how what you're describing in changing your thinking, and I loved your analogy to, allergic reaction to food with thoughts, that we could have thoughts that cause inflammation. In other words, they cause anger or loathing or whatever it might be. That's a beautiful analogy. I really appreciate that. But it's almost as if you're pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, through this inner discrimination about how you react to thoughts, which I think is exceptional. It's really wonderful. Do you recognize or ever encourage other tools? Like, for instance, with meditation, you might just start to connect with and open up that sort of happy place inside, that pure consciousness that's at the root of your being, and that starts to flower. And just without even the exercise of the discrimination about your thoughts start to transform and become more positive. Have you utilized those kind of tools, or do you recommend that?
Yes, and much more. So you know how I look at it. Matthew Ricard, whom I love, he's like a Buddhist monk who's also a neuroscientist. Mm-hmm. He calls meditation mind training. And when I first heard that a few years ago, I was like, yes, oh my God, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. And now I look at it more as mind friendship. So I have this relationship with my mind where sometimes I'll meditate it, and I'll sit with it. And I mean, I move my body every single day, and about every other day I'll do yoga. And there's this moment after yoga where it's nice to meditate, and I just get to hear what my mind is saying. So I'm just in this practice of seeing my mind sort of as a person, as a friend. So if I'm lying there and my mind's having all these anxious thoughts and throwing me out this mat, right, then I listen and I wonder what it's all about. So am I putting myself into some sort of situation that's stressing it out and it's trying to communicate something to me? Or does it just need a break? Does it just need to vent? You know, when you're listening to somebody's problems, there's always the question of, do you want me to help you fix them? Or do you just want me to be there for you? And I ask that about my mind. And, sometimes, even though I meditate and I can get my mind to be completely still for that time, I'll get up and then I'll start getting anxiety. And then I know that's a message that maybe I need to be creative. Maybe I need to write. So sometimes my mind needs stimulation. Yeah. Sometimes it needs meditation. And the most important thing is to, if you think about building a relationship, the most important thing about a relationship is to just commit to keeping it going. So, how do you improve a relationship with a partner? You know, you could go to the amusement park, you could go to dinner together, you could go for walks. There's so many things you can do to honor that relationship. And it's really like that with the mind. So meditation is just as important as intimacy in a relationship. So important to make that connection. But so are all these other things too. And I was actually doing an exercise with an amazing lady, with a friend of mine the other day, and it's called Feeding Your Demons. It's like this ancient Buddhist practice. And she was saying to me, she said, wow, your subconscious is like right on par. It just responds to you. And I was like, yeah, me and my mind, we're friends. We get along. It's my friend. It doesn't work against me. And that, no matter what happens, if my house burns down, if I gain 50 pounds, if everybody I know dies, I've got a mind that's on my side, and that's going to help me deal with it. So, of course there's meditation, but there's also customizing everything to your own personal relationship with your own mind and making it work.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Making your mind a friend. That's really a beautiful concept. With that, I think we need to go to another break. You're listening to Mind Matters. I'm J.M. Boris. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute to continue our conversation with Veronica Tugaleva.
Imagine your physician prescribed you soothing, synchronized, warm oil massages from two therapists, individualized herbalized steam treatments and herbal packs,
Shirodhara,
chakra balancing meditations, and much more. This tension-easing treatment that relieves anxiety, ringing in the ears, autoimmunity, stress-induced issues, and insomnia can be found at Fern Life Center. Call today and experience what the people of India have utilized to stay young and vibrant since 5,000 years ago. The Panchakarma Therapy Program at the Fern Life Center cleanses your body, mind, and spirit to achieve perfect health through the ancient Eastern medical wisdom of Ayurveda. Prepare your body for the change of seasons and melt away hidden stress with the Panchakarma treatment from Fern Life Center. Call 425-391-FERN or visit us in Issaquah to schedule your appointment with Keisha Ewers for your first consultation. You can find out more information online at fernlifecenter.com. Fern Life Center's Panchakarma Therapy. Detox, relax, and heal. Mention this ad and get a free detoxifying steam treatment with any regular massage. Insurance plans do not cover Panchakarma treatments, but usually cover the office visits with our medical providers. Again, call Fern Life Center at 425-391-3376 to schedule an appointment for this incredible anti-aging program.
Do you suffer from pain? Pain comes in many forms, from muscle aches and pains to nerve pain. It's painful not to have the energy you want, or to suffer from allergic reactions to food, the environment, or your pets. An innovative technology that is being used at Harvard Medical School could be your answer. The Aura PTL laser system is like acupuncture with no needles. It works on the energy body and the physical body, bringing relief from pain, hormone imbalance, adrenal fatigue, and even allergies of all kinds. Combined with homeopathy, this non-invasive therapy brings healing on all the levels of your body. To find out more about laser therapy, go to fernlifecenter.com or call 425-391-3376. That's 425-391-3376. Your consultation with Keisha Ewers, ARNP, is covered by most insurance companies. Call now.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Mind Matters, and I'm J.M. Boris, and we are speaking with Veronica Tugaleva, the author of The Love Mindset, which raises my next question. Veronica, can you describe just what the love mindset is?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. The love mindset is a state of mind where your mind is working with you, for you, and it knows what the rest of you need. So a great way to understand this concept, because sometimes it's a little hard, is when you think of breathing, you're like, oh, I breathe through my nose, right? And mm-hmm. when you think of eating, you're like, oh, I eat through my mouth. Well, you don't really eat with your mouth. Most of the eating happens in your digestive system, which is unseen. And you don't really breathe with your nose, and most of the breathing part happens in your lungs, and that's unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about love, we often speak of the heart, and that's where most of it happens, right? The feeling part, that's sort of like the lungs and the stomach. But when love comes in, it's coming in through our minds. It's coming in through our perceptions. So the love mindset is simply a state of mind that's allowing us to have those feelings. And part of it is knowing that we need those feelings to live.
Okay. Beautiful. I like that. So it's kind of like opening your mind to receiving love in a way, like opening your mouth to get the food in or something, huh?
Exactly. And I always say, you know, before we can open our hearts, we must open our minds. An open-minded person will be an open-hearted person. Those two are incredibly linked.
Now you've spoken about, I want to dig into this a little more, like, so what it means to open the mind in this way. You've talked about that thinking about thinking and being aware of your thoughts, the quality of your thoughts, and befriending your mind, or at least having your mind be a friend to you. So what do you, can you say anything else besides those things in terms of opening your mind to kind of allow for this love mindset?
Sure. Well, so the mind is, as you're probably beginning to sense, is sort of a gatekeeper between love and our experience of love. And so for a gatekeeper to allow anything in, there has to be this permission. And for there to be permission, there has to be an understanding of necessity. And so that's where most of us are going wrong. You know, our mouths are the gatekeepers to us having food, but so are our minds, you know. But your mind says, you need food to live, so go out and get some food. Mm-hmm. I permit you to go do that. And you go, and you have these drives to go and get food. But when it comes to love, we're sort of confused because we either think that we don't need it or we think that it comes from other people. So most people are either anorexic, like love anorexic, or they're love disabled. I mean, if you had to get somebody to breathe for you or help you eat, you would be called disabled. So if you need somebody to love you, to feel love, if it's a basic necessity, then that's a disability. And so our minds are just really not, most people's minds are just not wound up around this idea of what love is. Do we need it? Where is it? So part of the love mindset is understanding that you need love to live, that there are dire consequences of not getting enough love, mm-hmm. right? The same way as there are dire consequences to not getting enough oxygen, to not getting enough water, to not getting enough food. There are dire consequences to not getting enough love. And then when you see yourself and other people this way, that's really what we call compassion, where you realize that there are no good people, no bad people. There's just hunger and health. And you begin to see people, people who commit acts of violence, people who have mental distress, you see these people as hungry, right? And you can help them feed themselves. Mm-hmm. And once they get that love that they need, then they'll be restored back to the health that's already waiting there.
Now, that's amazing. First of all, your whole description there was just mind-blowing, and thank you for that. You just mentioned the consequences of love deficiency. Just as, you know, if we don't get enough food, we don't get enough water, that kind of thing, there are pretty dire consequences. So what are the consequences of not enough love?
Sure. I've classified them in the love mindset and, I suppose in my mindset, as there's passive submission. So that's sort of what a tree does when it doesn't get enough nourishment. It just sort of wilts slowly, dies silently. And you can see this when people have depression or laziness or low self-image. They just sort of slow down and quiet down. And then there's violent resistance, which is what happens to a fish when you deprive it of its nourishment. So you pull a fish out of the water and she'll struggle until the very last moment. It's just gasping to take a breath. Hmm. And this is where we get, you know, addiction, where we get violence. And we glamorize the violent resistance quite a bit in our society. I mean, we look at, like, the belligerent rock stars, and we see some sort of romance to it. But it's only because we're identifying with a part of ourselves that's also starving like that. So there are different ways to starve, and the depressed person is just as starving as the violent person. They're just starving in their own different, separate way. And the most important thing I think we have to do, especially when looking at social issues, is to stop judging people for what they do when they're in a state of complete and utter helpless, desperate lack of love. because you don't know. If you were in a room and you hadn't eaten for weeks and, you know, your mother was right next to you, would you bite off your mother's leg? I don't know. You don't know. Those are your survival instincts. You know, nobody can blame you for those. So when we look at these things that we do, that others do, these things that we find difficult to forgive in ourselves, to forgive in others, you get automatic forgiveness, automatic compassion with the love mindset when you begin to see their actions as consequences of whether or not they're allowing love into themselves.
Hmm. Okay. I also really appreciate what you said, that you start to see with compassion, you start to see that there's just hunger and health. And I really love that perspective because it does kind of evoke naturally compassion. So that's beautiful. So what has been your experience when it comes to trying to give the nurturing love that somebody is lacking? Does it really turn them around, or are those, is the deficiency so deep that you're not touching it somehow?
Well, you know, the thing is that, it's exactly like the tree. So let's say that the tree has, the leaves are brown with tiny little green spots, mm-hmm. and you've been just watering poison over it your entire life. If you begin to water that tree with water, it will come back. You know, we can all come back, mm-hmm. but it's about persisting and doing it all the time. So this is something that I run into with, you know, being a people helper, that it's about empowering. To me, it's about empowering people to water themselves. Mm-hmm. Because no matter how much I water somebody, if I turn my back and they're watering their roots with poison or they're not watering themselves at all, that's not going to help. And, you know, I've really found that somebody, if they come to me for help, if they come to anybody for help, you know, it's not about my specific philosophy or anyone's specific philosophy. It's really about the person who wants to be helped making a decision that they're going to heal, that they're willing to heal, they're committing themselves to healing. Hmm. And when they do that and they sort of take it into their own hands and they realize, you know, there's no program, there's no expert, there's no 5 tips, 10 steps, nothing can help me if I'm not on my own side. Then when you kind of turn to yourself that, and you put that commitment in, then I can help people that are doing that. I can nurture them. I can just show them. I'm like, this is a watering can, and you water your mind. And they're like, oh, and, you know, you see them grow and blossom. But I find that in our society, there's this sort of culture of problems, you know, people have problems and they want to talk about their problems and they want to make excuses. And that's very different, you know, to prove to ourselves that we're broken, mm-hmm. to go into the DSM and start self-diagnosing ourselves and, you know, be like, oh, I think I have all the symptoms of depression. And, you know, that's very different. It's like this glorification of the starvation. So, you know, you take a starving person, of course you can feed them to health. Right. Mm-hmm. And you can help them do that. But if they don't go off and commit themselves to eating more, now that you've put them into a culture, into a place where they can eat, if they insist on starving, there's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. And that's really my biggest challenge, you know, at this point with what I'm doing, is helping people open their minds about opening their minds. Mm-hmm. Because the opening the mind thing I can do, but if they if people aren't willing to go there, it's usually because they think that it'll be too painful, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you just have this change where it's too painful to, the pain of staying the same outweighs the pain of change. Like, okay, I'm going to change. Fine, I'll change. And I think that's what happened to me. You know, just this utter stubbornness.
Well, I was just going to say, it's just amazing to me. You've developed this really profoundly insightful system, almost entirely based on your own experience, isn't it? It's not come through getting a PhD in psychology or anything like that. This is really rooted in your experience, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I mean, I do love to read. I mean, I read all the time. And when I read, even though I teach a lot of, you know, like spirituality and self-love, I don't really read books about spirituality and self-love. I read books about, like, philosophy and science, and, you know, that might surprise some people, but I gain my inspiration from elsewhere, you know, and I just try to see the world in a holistic way, and I will take others' ideas, but, you know, that's what really this book was about. It was about, I didn't know what was going on. I hadn't even found a single spiritual book at that point, and I just had no idea what was going on. And I was just trying to understand it. And since I was a child, I mean, I've been very fond of understanding things, sometimes to the point that it would just annoy my parents and teachers. But I was always very much into detecting patterns, understanding things, you know, picking them apart and seeing, like, okay, but why? Why does it work like this? Why is this happening? And it's just too funny that I stumbled upon something that, you know, I look at Buddhism. I mean, anytime that I intersect with Buddhist ideals or Buddhist exercise, I'm like, oh my gosh, I agree with this. You guys thought of this already. This is great.
Cool. All right. We need to go to another break. You're listening to Mind Matters. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute to talk more about the love mindset.
If you need somebody to love you, while you're looking for somebody to love.
Enjoy a relaxing, healing, hour-long Reiki session through the hands of meditation and Reiki master Ajay and Boris. Reiki treats the whole person, including body, emotions, mind, and spirit, creating many beneficial effects that include relaxation and feelings of peace, security, and well-being. Many have reported miraculous results. Ajayan incorporates tantric mantras and yantras that bring an added dimension and power to traditional Reiki healing. To find out more and to schedule your appointment, email ajayan@ajayan.com today. Get half off on your Reiki treatment with Ajayan. Email ajayan@ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com to schedule your appointment today.
Meditation heals and vitalizes both mind and body. Learn this wonderful art with world-renowned meditation instructor Ajayan Boris in the Effortless Mind Meditation Classes. The Effortless Mind Meditation Classes offer a direct experience of exceptionally deep meditation, accessible to anyone. Call the Fern Life Center today, 425-391-FERN. The Effortless Mind. So easy, anyone can do it.
Ajayan's next Effortless Mind Meditation class is being held in Issaquah, May 3rd. For more information and to register, visit ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Somebody to love.
And welcome back. You're listening to Mind Matters. I'm Ajayan Boris, and we are speaking with Veronica Tugaleva about the love mindset. And honestly, this has been an amazing interview, Veronica. I just want to say I just am so really impressed with your insights. And it's, you know, it seems like a very cogent kind of understanding and system that you've developed. Just amazing. I wanted to mention to our listeners, in case they wanted to find out more about you, of course, the book is there, The Love Mindset, but also you have a website, right?
I do, yeah.
And what is that?
That's www.veronica.org, but it's spelled a little strange, so it's V-I-R-O-N-I-K-A.org.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so check it out. And it sounds like you are also very particular about the people that you work with, right?
I am.
Which is interesting. All right. Anyway, so I wanted to get into a couple other concepts that you mentioned. You'd speak of a mask that must come off. And I wonder if you could explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. Well, you know, most of us go from mask to mask to mask. Mm-hmm. We're always, so we need to have a sense of identity to live. And that identity, especially in our culture now, comes from these social identities that we've seen all around us. So when I was kind of like the lonely loser, overweight immigrant, my identity was of one thing, you know, my identity was of being the lonely loser immigrant. And I remember part of the whole eating disorder addiction thing were examples like Sherlock Holmes and Dr. House. And I saw them and I'm like, okay, well, they're not good with people. They're really smart. And they're, you know, addicted to drugs. And look at them. They're just cold and they love it. And so I sort of began to put on that identity and put on that mask. And that was less painful than the other one. And I think we're always doing this. We're searching for a new identity because we need an identity to live. And just painting the ones that we see on television, or we see a person that sort of resembles us and they seem to be having a better time in life, so we start to copy his or her arm movements or the way that they speak, or start to put ourselves through these filters. And doing that, we're just assuming that we need to craft an identity. We need to craft an identity. And by taking off the mask, we realize that there's already an identity waiting for us. And that identity is not actually separate from the identities of others. It's not that you are a radio host and I am an author, right? Deep within you and deep within me is the same thing. It's just this boundless potential, just this potential, this love, this life force, whatever you want to call it. You know, religious people will call it something very different than scientific people will call it, but it's the same thing. It is what lies within you that is the same as what lies within everything else, this oneness. And when we take off the mask, so some people might call this shedding the ego, and we realize ourselves to be this interconnected being that's connected to everything, then everything that does separate us is just a game, right? Like the career and the body and the thoughts and the relationships, everything's a game. It's fun, and you can craft yourself, and you can sculpt yourself, and you can become an amazing golfer, but you are not a golfer. That's not who you are, right? And you can go out there, and you can make your body beautiful. You can, like, work it out, but you are not your body. And when we realize that, then there's just this sort of freedom, because we don't need to keep jumping from identity to identity to identity. We just allow the identity that's already there to be what it is. And everything else, we just sort of have fun creating, but we don't put on our face. We don't put it over ourselves. There's no filter.
Right. Beautifully said. Wonderful. All right. One other concept that you talk about in your book is villain thoughts. And you may have touched on this a little bit already, but I wondered if you could just talk just a little bit more about that. And are you familiar with the term ants, you know, automatic negative thoughts?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Because that's similar.
Yeah, it sounds similar to me. So I won't ask you to compare the two since you don't know about the ants, but you might have something to look into if you ever have an interest in that. But what do you mean when you say villain thoughts?
Well, and I've written down what you suggested. So. by villain thoughts, I just mean this thought that this person is bad. This is bad. Mm-hmm. Bad person. And so sometimes we think that of ourselves. Sometimes we think that of, so I talk about the three kinds of villains in our heads in the book too. So there's the everyday villain. So that's the boss, often the boss, or, you know, the partner or the mother, the person that you see every day, maybe even yourself. There's the past villain. So the person that hurt you all that time ago. So maybe also the mother, the father, like the rapist, any of that, the kids in your high school. And then there's the distant villain on a mountaintop. So this is the people on the news, so the pedophiles, the murderers, the school shooters, all of that. Mm-hmm. But these are all these different villains that we can have in our heads. And the way that villain thoughts work is that all of them, like all other thoughts, are, if you remember the tree metaphor that I made earlier, they're what you nourish yourself with. Mm-hmm. So if you put even a drop of poison on your roots, if you think even one villain thought about anything or anyone, then it starts to multiply. And maybe you've had this experience. I've definitely had this experience that if you think a bad thought of the guy on the television, suddenly you're thinking a bad thought of the grocery store clerk, and then you're thinking bad thoughts about your partner, and then you're thinking bad thoughts about the mother and about yourself. And it just becomes this rolling ball, right? Because mm-hmm. what you've done is you've put it onto your roots, and now that's what you're watering yourself with, right? It's a habit. It becomes a habit of how you nourish yourself. So it becomes this sort of funny and usually unaccepted thing in our society that if you begin to hate anyone at all, if you begin to think villain thoughts of anyone at all, then you're setting yourself up for failure. You're setting yourself up for misery, no matter how seemingly distant that person is from you. So in order to nourish yourself, you also need to nourish others. You need to, in order to accept and love yourself, you need to love others. And in order to love others, you need to accept and love yourself. And realizing that there's no difference between the two.
Exactly.
It's a little difficult at first, but once you get it, oh my gosh, so much peace.
Right. Veronica, we need to stop there. We're at the end of our hour, but thank you so much. And I wanted to just comment there. To see others that they are yourself. You know, if you have a negative thought about someone else, you're having a negative thought about yourself. Anyway, Veronica, I've so enjoyed this. Thank you so much. Again, the book, The Love Mindset. Tune in next week. We'll be talking with Tobin Hart about the four virtues. You've been listening to Mind Matters, part of the Healthy You Radio Network.